Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is now 8:08 here at WCCO Radio. I am broadcasting here from WBZ in Boston, and I want to thank you so much for sticking and staying with us here at CCO. I want to report that my grands are doing great. My little one, Fola Sade, is so beautiful, and I could just see the love she has for me already, and I hope that I am not misinterpreting that, but oh my gosh, I'm absolutely head over heels in love with both of my grands. One is 4.5, and now this one is about 7 weeks old. So just incredible. My daughter is recovering. She still has, you know, some things that she's got to do, and that's hard for her. But I am just so grateful to be here to help her and her husband and to spend some time with my grands as well. All right, the phone lines are open to you at 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. What do you want to talk about? There's a lot on our plates. First of all, we just finished talking about the Minneapolis police chief having to step aside. We do know that there was a contentious relationship with her and Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges. These two women did not seem to get along very well. And I think it was our mayor that really kind of led the way for her, for the oust of the police chief. As we sit and we go further with this and we're watching, trying to figure out who's going to take her place and what does it really mean. I mean, Harto was, you know, that first woman and first openly gay person to head the department. And we all know that it's really heavily male driven. Some may look at that and say, oh, you know, she had a really difficult time. But the bottom line is that if we can't get the job done, there has to be change because our neighborhoods in Minneapolis are really suffering from all of this. Seriously, there's no trust right now. And as you heard us talk about the body cams not being on, and my guest, Gary Schiff, who's running for city council again, he's saying, you know, well, you know, if we kept them on all the time, then it would just be a lot of back talk that would be on, and we don't need all of that. Well, hey, people are staring at us through our computers every day. We're being monitored all the time, and of course they're going to get a lot of nonsense and stuff we're talking about that nobody's interested in, but at the same time, when they need to capture something, capture it. So if it's the life of the battery of it, then that needs to change. It has to get better. We need better equipment, because those body cams, it should be mandatory. Like, you will lose your job if you don't have those body cams on. So how do you feel about it? 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226 if you'd like to join the conversation tonight.
Gerilyn?
Yes, sir.
Betty from Minneapolis would like to talk to you.
Ah, Betty. How are you, Betty?
How am I?
Yes, how are you?
I'm ancient and honorable, Gerilyn. I'm probably a contemporary with your mom. But I wanted to call. I've been praying for your family, and you mentioned last week, that your granddaughter sings.
Yes.
You could have her sing for us one of these Saturdays.
Oh, my gosh.
There?
I would love that. She sings no matter what. She sings when she's happy. She sings when she's not.
What? Oh, and the other thing, I can't leave my home because I'm handicapped, but I was thinking it would be wonderful if the Steele family did one of the programs on Channel 2, the fundraisers, you know, when they have all those different...
Oh, yeah.
The Celtic Thunder and
Lolo. Yeah, yeah.
Because I couldn't get down to the Dakota to see you, and I'm sure there are a lot of people like me that are homebound and would just love to see a fundraising program by the Steele family.
Well, make sure you let them know that. Call, you know, Twin Cities Public Radio and let them know. We'd love for the Steeles to be a part of that as well.
I didn't understand you.
Oh, it sounds like there's an echo, so I'm going to have to let you go, Betty, because I can hear a lot of myself, so I apologize for that. But those that would like to call in, please do at 651.
Well, you're my bright spot, especially you and your son.
Oh, it sounds like there's an echo, so I'm going to have to let you know.
Oh, you have your radio on. That's what the problem is. Okay, we're going to have to let her go. Kevin, I'm so sorry about that. Oh, I'm sorry about that, Betty. Your phone, your radio was on. So those that call in, make sure you turn the radio off or way down, or else we won't be able to hear each other.
And we have Mike from Coon Rapids.
Mike from Coon Rapids, welcome to CCL.
Hi, how's it going tonight?
Oh, it's going all right, Mike. What do you have to say? What do you think?
Oh, that's good. I was just going to make a comment about Interim Chief Aaron Dondo, I believe I'm pronouncing that right.
Yes.
Just a little research on the guy. He's been with the force since 89, so that's always nice to have someone in there with some experience. Obviously.
And some history. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, he spent most of his career not on the streets looking for bad guys, not in a major crimes unit or robbery, homicide, or vice. He wasn't in narcotics. He wasn't with the tactical unit. What he made his living on was investigating other cops. And an internal affairs cop, he's got a different perspective on law and order than a beat cop would, or a cop from one of those major, you know, like a major crimes unit. And I don't think that hiring an internal affairs guy who's handpicked by Mayor Hodges, that's not going to help the body camera situation. That's not going to help the community policing relations. And one more thing, that when Officer Yanez killed Philando Castile, it was an Officer Yanez problem. When Officer Noor killed Justine Damon, it's a Minneapolis police problem. It seems like that the Somali faith is really playing a role in this, and that this, he's almost got like a golden ticket right now. No one's really pressuring him or anything like that. So I'll
that's not true. Then you, no. I encourage you to look at. No, I encourage you to read the articles about that, because the Somali community is really up in arms. They're being attacked. People are calling. Let's just say xenophobia has shown its ugly head again in this. And so, yeah, pay attention. We are really, really dealing with something major here in Minneapolis, and it's going to spread across the great state of Minnesota. There are people of color all across this state now that used to be unheard of. And so we have to come together. We either come together or we fall together, period.
It's just not coming together for Officer Noor. They can kind of let him skate on this one, and it's a Minneapolis Police Department problem. And we'll hear from Officer Noor when, you know, the political activist and, you know, the political correctness, we have to, you know, they have to choose a side. They're tripping over themselves. They don't know, do we defend Justine Damon, the Australian who mm-hmm. was a yogi and health, mm-hmm. mental health and wellness coach? Do we protect her? She is anti-gun. Or do we protect Officer Noor, one of the first Somalian police officers? There's re-elections involved. It's just, justice doesn't seem to be at the top of the plate.
But let me ask you this question, Mike. Are you saying that because he is Somali, that he took it upon himself to kill because he wanted her dead? Are you saying that because he's Somali
in
his faith?
No, not at all. It's nothing. I'm not in the mindset of Officer Noor. I'm saying on the peripheral, the outside, everyone else, the council members, the mayor, the chief. It just seems like, and reading editorials in the newspaper, you know, it just seems like not as much onus and responsibility is put on Officer Noor. All he has to do is stand up and be a man and tell the truth. In Minnesota, he's not going to go to prison for life. He's not going to go to prison for 10 years. He's not going to go to prison for 5 years.
What makes you think he's
never going to be a cop again?
But what makes you think he's not standing up telling the truth?
Well, he seems to be hiding, and he's not making any comments, and he's already got a lawyer. He's expressing his condolences through his lawyer in a day and age where everyone's on social media giving us all the information of their lives, you know. And he's not a public figure in that regard, where we don't need all that. But it would help to come
out.
But
that's one of the first things that the cops do is get a lawyer. No. That's one of the first things they do is get a lawyer. You're advised to get a lawyer. So I'm not quite sure where you're coming from with that, but I appreciate you calling in, Mike. Thank you so much.
All right.
Deep breath, Jolynn. Deep breath. We're going to take a break, play a little spot or two, and then come back in just a moment. It is now 8:21 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. It's a pleasure being on with you. And the phone lines are open until the bottom of this half hour, 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. Let's go over to Jim calling in from St. Paul. Hey, Jim.
Hello there, Geraldine. You know, I hope when I turned on, you said, yeah, what do you want to talk about? And I want to talk about this guy that Trump hired. Is that all right?
Oh, yeah. You're talking about Scaramucci?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, I watched every news program today like I always do. And this guy is as big a liar and BSer as the rest of them, only he might be a little bit more because he's cocky on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
They had that Sarah Huckabee on, the one that took...
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, is the new speaker.
Press secretary.
Sarah Huckabee.
Yeah, yeah.
You know who I'm talking
yes,
about.
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm.
Right. They had her on with George Stephanopoulos. And she was saying a bunch of spiel, like she always does, right? And he said, well, you know that isn't true. She didn't deny that it wasn't true. They just went on to something else. These people lie so much. So consistently, I don't know. Honestly, Geraldine, I don't know what we're going to do. You got these people; they say there's nothing there. There's nothing behind the curtain. And my God, I'm telling you, every day it's another bombshell. I mean, I don't understand how this is going to go. And I think he's going to have to try to fire that the prosecutor.
Mm-hmm.
But when he does that, I think the Republicans are going to leave him. This is really getting to be dangerous and a mess.
Well, no. It's already very, very dangerous. It's already a mess, and we've known it's been a mess long before he even came into the White House. Of course it's getting worse, but I've been screaming that it's going to get worse for the longest time. And now that we are in it and we are watching it unfold, it's like watching a reality TV show. Some people feel completely disconnected to it. It's like, wow, look at that on television. This is not a reality show that has a plot and somebody's got the camera rolling. This is our reality.
Right.
This is actually what we're living today. And to say that the G20 is now going to become the G19 plus one, and we're the plus one?
That's because here's the thing. The point of my call is, how in the world can they keep lying like they do every doggone time they get on TV? All they do is lie and tell everybody how good Trump is, and everybody knows the answer.
Because politicians have a reputation of being liars. That's how.
These are the worst liars ever. Absolutely,
but at the same time, this has been simmering for a long time, and all of a sudden the perfect storm happened, and it happened. Okay, we got to go. Thanks so much for calling in, Jim. I love how active you are.
Okay.
Run for office, by the way. Run for office. All right, let's go over to Michael calling in from Minneapolis. Hey, Michael, are you there?
Hello?
Michael? Yes, Michael, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right, go right ahead. Good evening.
Okay, I got 2 points to talk about tonight. Quickly, the police chief that left last week,
mm-hmm.
I think she was pretty much set up for failure in
right.
that.
Mm-hmm. Some people would agree with that.
She was head of a big city police mm-hmm. force. I don't know how much experience she'd had, but I wouldn't want to try to manage those people. They've just been through heck and back. And I just think that's maybe why part of it's getting out of hand. They need a leader in there and someone that'll take charge.
And who
someone
do you think that leader
should
be?
With a large city.
Who do you think that should be?
I don't know. There's got to be cops down there who have been there 20 years and know what's going on. I think she might have had a lot of administrative experience. I don't know if she was on the street very much.
No,
I don't know.
Well, I think we should definitely read her resume. It's better than that, let me tell you. And I've had the chance to sit next to her at the dais at the University of St. Catharines in St. Paul. And she's a unique woman. And she came in knowing that she was in a male-dominated industry, and it wouldn't be easy. So, you know, I think we should do our homework on that and make sure that we know what we're talking about. But at the same time, I see where you're going.
Correct. I think she was a very nice person, too. She just it would be a tough job. And the other thing is, you and your guest one time kind of shot me down when I had mentioned that the world is overpopulated. And you both said, well, that's not the truth. And if you were to just check basic facts, if you believe the internet or not, about the United Nations fact, Bill Gates is heavy into overpopulation.
Yeah.
And he makes predictions about how in a few more years we're going to tip over the scale, and it's really going to get chaotic. Mm-hmm. It's going to take, I think he said something around 8 billion people. And right now I think there's 6 or 6.5. And that's my comment on that. I just want.
Yeah, but I want to say to you, though, Mike, you know, he says this after he's had more than two of his children. You know, he has more than two. Same thing with Warren Buffett, who works with him on overpopulation. So it's difficult for us to get on board with people who tell us that, you know, hey, we need to stop populating, that, you know, it's just too many people on the planet. But you have already made your contributions of more than 1.5, which is what he's promoting.
Touché,
let's pay attention. Let's pay attention. All right. Thanks, Mike. Call in anytime.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right. Do we have someone else?
Yes, one more. We have Jay in Plymouth.
Jay in Plymouth, welcome to CCO.
Hi there, good to be with you.
You too, Jay.
Comment on this Trump stuff. You know, this guy calls up, he says they're lying. You know, the problem is it doesn't get clarified what any penalty could be over this Russia stuff. Everybody just assumes that if there was any kind of communication, it's some kind of a law that's been broken. And Trump or his people or whoever can be taken out of the picture and jailed and everything else. Okay, that's not what the law is. Federal election law says that nobody can collude to essentially rig an election. You can't change the ballots. You can't rig the outcome. You can't coerce or threaten people into voting a certain way. Okay, that's what has to be done in order for this thing to have any teeth at all. And that's not what happened. Everybody knows Russia preferred Trump win. Okay, no secret. Even if they told the Trump campaign that that's what they wanted, it's still not a violation of any kind of law. So are we just going to keep going and going and going over and over on this when nothing can happen anyway? There's no evidence any kind of federal election law was broken. And it's not explained, so people think as long as they can prove somebody talked Russia, then somebody can go to jail. That's not the way it works.
And did you feel the same way for Clinton when they went over and over and over and over and over and over and over with him?
Yeah, I felt the same way. I don't care what party you are. If there is nothing to it, it's like, I wish Trump would just come out and say, you know what, the Russians preferred I would win. They wondered if they could assist in any all in the campaign, whatever. It's over. I wish he would just come out and say it.
And you are okay with that.
I'm fine with it because you know what?
Wait. I just want to make sure you were born and raised in this country. You are a citizen of this country.
Yeah, and let me tell you one other thing.
And you are absolutely okay with the president colluding with Russia. Actually, our enemy, one of our worst, worst enemy that we have right now, that has as many nukes as we do.
Sure.
Are you kidding me? This does not bother you at all.
If that's what Russia.
Have you ever been to Russia? Have you ever been to Russia?
So you're saying that Russia...
Have you ever been?
No, I have not.
Okay, I have. And I actually had the militia follow me for almost 2 weeks because I had dinner at the American embassy and they thought I was a spy. And let me tell you something. To have the foot of the Russian militia on your back is nothing pretty, honey. It is nothing. It's nothing sweet, ain't nothing pretty, and it will scare you to death or it will make you rise up and fight. So as we sit back and we go, oh, this is nothing, then I strongly suggest you just go right on over to Russia and why don't you try doing something over there that will really tick them off and see what happens. We got to go. Thanks so much for your call. Thank you so much for your call. All right, I'm going to go get an aspirin and we'll be back with my next guest in just a moment.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It is now 8:34 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talking, and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. Well, this particular half hour is really something. This story, when I read about it, I was just so, it was just a warm, fuzzy feeling for me. I just was very excited about it. I have a girlfriend who is kind of involved in some of this as well. Gave me some really great back information about it as well. Well, joining me to talk about some of the brightest youngsters in Africa who have been hanging out in Minnesota the past few weeks as part of the Mandela Washington Fellowship hosted by the Center for Integrative Leadership at the University of Minnesota's Humphrey School of Public Affairs and the Public Management Institute. Now, this fellowship emphasizes fundamentals such as strategic planning, leadership, and financial management. And they are joining me, these two leaders are joining me to talk about and find out about their odyssey and their attitude towards Americans and our way of life. Joining me is Abdul Ijiwumi and Rebecca Kosika. Welcome to both of you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. So tell us a little bit more about the fellowship. Let's start with you, Abdul.
Okay, well, Abdulrazak Ijiwumi is my name. I'm from Nigeria. I'm a medical doctor. I work as a medical officer in a university in northern Nigeria. And I specialize also in working with humanitarian organization, Doctors Without Borders. Mandela Washington Fellowship is a program and initiative by the U.S. government and the Mandela Foundation. It was established in 2014 to train young African leaders on how to make Africa a better place. It's also a program that was established in order to foster a relationship between young Africans and Americans. It has been great that this program had been able to build Africans' capacity to develop their own community. I will just stop there for now, just as we move on in the program.
All right, Rebecca, you are from Tanzania, correct?
Yeah, right.
So tell us how you got involved.
With the program?
Yes.
Yeah, back home, I'm a social worker and a project administrator at Brian Holden Vision Institute, which is an international NGO dealing with eye care, trying to prevent blindness and vision impairment. I've been there for 6 years, and when I saw an online competition from the U.S. Embassy about the Young African Leadership Initiative, Mandela Washington Fellowship, mm-hmm. I thought I was a good leader right then. Then I said, let me go for it. Let me apply and go learn in America and come back, implement it back home in Tanzania. So I applied, and thank God I made it, and I'm here.
Well, I have a brother that has visited Tanzania several times and has worked with a few orphanages there as well. And he loves, loves, loves your country. So welcome here to the Twin Cities. Really, really welcome. So as you come here to this great state of Minnesota as a fellow, and you start to learn our ways and you hear so much about what we are looking towards as Americans, particularly when it comes to our relationships with some of the African countries, what do you think about that, Rebecca?
Come again? I didn't get your question.
I'm sorry. Now that you are here in the United States and you are here in Minnesota, is this your first visit to the States?
Yeah, to Minnesota the first time.
Your first time. What about other states within our union?
I've been to Chicago many, many years back, like 10 years when I was a little girl.
Okay, so really the Midwest has been your only view of the United States.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Knowing where Minnesota stands, having you here at the University of Minnesota for this fellowship, I want to know what you have learned about Americans and our ideologies or our feelings about African countries and building relationships with them, including Tanzania.
Okay. First, Americans are very good people. Like, we've met with very great leaders and very humble and down-to-earth who just speak with people in community, on community development or community management and relationships. We did a lot of community services and site visits where we got to meet great leaders or achievers and learning from them. And they're so, so down-to-earth and so willing to help us, so willing to share their experience and willing to let us learn and collaborate with them, believing in us and trying to see the potential in us and telling us that it may take time, but we can also make it. We've been to clinics, North Point clinics. We've been to Medtronic. We've been to Hennepin County Health Center, Public Health Center, Recycling Center, Jail. We have visited the mayor of St. Paul, Coleman. We have gone to the library and learned a lot of things that we back in our country don't have or have not yet achieved. And all the site visits, all the academic sessions, all the community services, you've been to Open Arms, you've been to Lutheran Social Services Center, you've been to Books for Africa, we've been to so many places, and we have learned a lot from all these organizations and the diversity, and, well, I don't know. I have a lot to say, but the time might be too short, but it's a lot, and so many other events which are building us up and helping us to like have the diversity and do better back home when you return.
And I really appreciate you joining us and giving us your understanding of how this is working for you and how you see us. Dr. Abdul, you know, this is part, the young African leaders are part of a group of 1,000 dynamic young African leaders, correct?
Yep.
Who come to the U.S. each year under this program, which was begun by former President Obama in 2010. And he got a lot of flack for that, but we're really grateful that he instituted this. Is this a give and take that you are finding? She talked so beautifully about how what she is learning about being here and, you know, what fellows are coming here and taking away and bringing back to their countries. But what are we learning as well from those 1,000 that are here, including yourself?
Well, just like she said, it's a great lot that we've learned since we came here. But there is no society in this world that doesn't have its own challenges. When we came here, we realized that America has its own challenges, racial issues, and, you know, people are not having some inclusiveness. But we believe that Africa has a lot to equally offer the world in terms of how we run our countries.
Mm-hmm.
We were able to realize that partnership is always the way to go. As we are learning from America, I believe, will also learn from Africa. And we've been able to interact with a lot of young Americans who are so eager to learn about how things are in Africa. I mean, they were able to make them realize the fact that Africa is not as bad as is being always depicted in the media, that we have a lot of opportunities that Americans can tap into. I mean, they can come to Africa. There is a lot of room for investment. And, Nigeria particularly is such a huge country with so much market and population that American companies can surely benefit from.
Mm-hmm.
So we believe that it's an exchange, and Americans should also take that opportunity to come to Africa and invest. It's an emerging continent, and the future is Africa. The future of the world is actually in Africa.
Mm-hmm. The stronger the relationship is between the African countries and our nations, particularly the G20, you know, I wonder if we really understand how working together can really make us better, whether it's in the medical communities, whether it's leaders that are working in public management, that sort of thing. There is so much that we can do together. And as those 1,000 come here and learn so much more, I hope that 1,000 of us will be able to come over to some of the African countries and do the same thing. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, that would be great. We'd be so glad to welcome Americans to Africa. Just like I said, we different part of the world with its own challenges. We have our challenges in Africa, but, well, it's not as bad as usually depicted. Africa is such a great place. We have a lot of tourist centers, tourist attraction, and we love Americans to come and experience Africa because we have a lot to offer. It's such a beautiful place.
Well, you know, Africa, we always lump it in to the continent. You don't hear people say, you know, North America is such a great place. They'll say the United States is a great place, Canada is a great place, Mexico is a great place. But you don't hear them say North America is a great place. But people will say Africa is a great place. They like to lump it all together. But yet each of those, 58 countries are so diverse and different.
Yeah, I mean, diversity is even in America, too. But, you know, particularly what we have identified is the fact that there are a lot of ethnic issues, you know, religious clashes in Africa. Mm-hmm. And it's just because Africans don't seem to understand themselves very well. The fact that we're just different in tongues and languages, but we're ultimately descended from same ancestry. And we should appreciate that and see ourselves as equals. We believe that as time goes on, we'll get to teach our young Africans the fact that unity is so important in diversity and that we have to work together to move our continent forward so that it could be attractive to foreigners, Americans, to want to come and invest and to catch fun.
Right. Well, as we watch all of this unfold, I really hope now you all are in town. When do you go back?
I think we'll be leaving here
on Sunday.
Next week, 30th July.
Okay.
For Washington, D.C., where we're going to be meeting other Africans and other senior leaders in the American community for a summit in Washington, D.C. Then by August 4th, I think 3rd or 4th, we'll leave America for our continent.
Mm-hmm. As you know, we have so many Africans here in our nation, in the United States, who are doctors and nurses and really have come in and help fortify our medical industry here. And are you hoping that you will see some type of exchange in that as well?
Quite a lot of Africans I've met here in Minnesota, particularly in the field of medicine, just like you stated, and they are doing fine, they're working fine, contributing to their community here. And it shows that if provided the right opportunity and conducive environment, Africans can perform and can be great. We hope to see this kind of attitude reflected back home. We hope to be able to see our government, put in the right conducive environment for young Africans to exhibit their potentials and reach the peak of their careers.
All right. My final question for both of you tonight, and Rebecca, I want to start with you. Again, the fellowship emphasizes fundamentals such as strategic planning and leadership. These are really two key points that, because I'm getting a master's degree in leadership, and so it's really important to me as we look at leadership around the world and how those leaders work together. We all saw what happened with the G20, even with our own president here in the United States. It is so important that the world knows that we all are on one understanding of what strategic planning, leadership, and how important it is for the world as global citizens. Do you see yourself, Rebecca, as a global citizen? And if so, as a leader, a future leader, do you believe that your citizenship as a global leader is going to really make a difference, not just between the United States and your continent of Africa, but across the world?
Yes. Absolutely.
In what way? How do you feel like we're already there, or that we have a long way to go?
It will take time, but we'll get there.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
I sure hope so. And then, Dr. Abdul, your last words?
I just want to build a bit on what you just said, that the fact that the world is still so much disunited. And, there is so much to do in terms of unity and, in the world generally. We hope that in the future, as we move on, people will tend to realize the fact that we have to come together irrespective of our tribe, our race, our religion, our social class, to make sure that ultimately everyone enjoys and everyone, is happy about the way the world is.
Mm. My daughter married a man from Benin next door to Nigeria, so the Republic of Benin. So yeah, I talked to her a lot about West Africa and leadership in those countries as well. Thank you both so much, Abdul Ijiwumi and Rebecca Kusika. Thank you, and safe travels to D.C. and beyond.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back in a moment. It's now 8:51. Let's just make that 8:52 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talkin', and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. I am broadcasting live all the way from Boston, Massachusetts, and I am just having the time of my life with my new granddaughter. So thank you so much to all of you who prayed for them. Now, this is brought to you by McCarthy Auto World. Again, the time is 8:52. Certified Cadillacs on sale, up to 40% off the original MSRP. Check out McCarthyAuto.com today. All right. As we sit and we listen to some of the subjects that we have talked about tonight, politics, what has happened with the fellows at the University of Minnesota, by the way, thank you so much, President Obama, for having this. I think it's wonderful that we host it here at our public university called University of Minnesota, and I stand a little taller because of that, so I'm really thrilled about that. And it's important that we have these conversations, relationships that can continue and make our world better, not just our cities, our communities, our state, but our nations and our world better. And that's a really big deal. Speaking of making our world better, I just want to say to Governor Dayton, you have had a lot of flack, and I am a big fan of yours. I think that none of us are perfect in anything that we do. There's just no perfect governor. There's no perfect politician. There's no perfect anything. No perfect singer. No perfect parent. But I do love anyone who leads from a point of compassion and trying to understand, going out of their way to try to understand the issues and to work hard to bring communities together. In an article from MenPost, it talks about the governor's job to appoint judges in the state of Minnesota. Since Mark Dayton he took over as governor, he has really made a remarkable change. In fact, the article says that today there are more women and people of color serving on the bench, the judiciary, than at any other point in the state's history. Even Dayton didn't know just how much the courts would change under his watch. Now, I disagree with that line. I'm not sure about MenPost. Maybe that's a fact for you, but I find that hard to believe because I know that Governor Dayton is very conscious of what is happening and not happening in the state of Minnesota. I do believe that. And from my research, that's what I find to be true. The demographic bubble, it says in the article, led to a huge number of judges retiring during Dayton's two terms. And by the time he steps down in January of 2019, the Democratic governor will have appointed more than half of all judges serving on the bench across Minnesota, more than any governor before him. And if State Supreme Court Justice David Strauss is approved to fill the vacancy of the U.S. Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals, he's been nominated to by President Donald Trump, Dayton, Governor Dayton, will end up appointing five of the seven judges sitting on the Minnesota Supreme Court. That's a huge impact, you guys. And so as we sit and we complain about this governor, let's look back at some things that have really made a difference for all of us here in the great state of Minnesota. Good things. I had a chance to interview one of the judges that was running. It was Wilhelmina. I can't think of her last name, so forgive me. But it's been wonderful to watch this all unfold because it is so critical and so important. And by the way, I am one who believes that there should be much more information put out there about the judges that are on our ballots. We don't have enough information. I've said this many times here on Steele Talkin'. I don't know enough. I don't know how their decisions are, but it's all about keeping a bias. I wish somebody would change that law. We should know how you vote. We should know where you stand because it's impossible to be completely unbiased, period. To the point that, that even in education, we are finding that you can now write your thesis from your bias, have some of your bias in it, because it's impossible to keep it out. And so I want more information so that when I make that, when I check off that box, when I decide who I'm going to vote for, that I am an informed voter. And I'm still not there yet. They say, oh, you can go online and pay a small fee to figure out how they have made decisions. There's not enough information about that. Can I just say? Not enough information about that. So if you get a chance, read this article that came out a couple of days ago on MenPost. It was written by Brianna Bierschbach, and that was on July 21st yesterday. So, I'm sorry, 2 days ago. So as we sit and we watch politics unfold and we complain and complain and complain, run for office, get out there and make a difference. Get out there and do something. All of us can do something. I'm going to use this microphone as much as I can to try to keep us focused, to try to keep me focused, because I'm one of the first one to go home and scream it out. And then I have to calm down and look at the reality of it all and say, what can I do to make a difference? I think if we just start together at that one point, we can really make a difference in this. Okay. As we move forward into Center Stage, which is coming up next, of course, you know that it's all about arts and entertainment. And thanks to Chan Hansen, we are able to present some interviews and tell you about shows that are coming to town or have been in town and really give you an overview of what's coming and what you should go and see. If you get a chance to go check it out, please make sure you let us know, because we would love to hear from you, to hear if you like the shows that we talk about. Now, I've got some great interviews coming up. Miles Blakemore, a trombone player who is joining me to talk about his win on the Minnesota Orchestra, the Rosemary and David Good Fellowship. He's now a fellow. He's African-American, and I'm so excited to talk to him. That's at 9:08. At 9:23, I'm going to talk to Genevieve Bennett, who is directing a piece called Time to Burn. She's the artistic director, and she's directing the show as well for the Red Bird Theater. I don't know a whole lot about them. That is at 9:23. Also at 9:35, we have Emily Albert Stunning. She is going to be a senior in high school this year, and just wait till you hear her story. She has a brand new song out and so much more. So stay tuned. And then, of course, the Mom and Michael Hour comes up later. We'll be back in just a moment.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.